Yep, we are. And then let's play the intro.
Straight jamming on that one.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Thank you, Apple Loops, for making the composition very quick. Yeah, I know. I like that part too. It was funny because, like, at first it was like a minute and a half, and I was like, "No, cut it to 15 seconds if you can. No one's gonna pay attention to that."
Nobody wants an intro over 15 seconds.
No, they don't. It's like I didn't even put any like other audio on it, and this is a podcast. Okay, so anyway, let's talk about your three favorite movies, shall we? Which the circle that I run in and the friends that I have, like I said, there are two groups of people. What are your three favorite movies? Oh, it's Bang Bang Bang, Bang, like right away, or it's okay. I've narrowed it down to eight, and you fall in the second category, but it's okay because it's just okay. And so your three favorites that you told me are, we're counting the whole trilogy, Lord of the Rings.
So that's already three movies.
Already three, right off the bat. But in my head, I like how I, of all the things that I can get around, I'm like, well, they shot it like it was one movie.
Yeah, exactly.
So there you go. You know, and it is a whole one thing. So.
Yeah.
Step Brothers, which is funny because it's not the first time this movie has popped up on this podcast. The Big Short and Forrest Gump. Cool. So let's start at the top, shall we?
All right, cool. Let's do it. Okay.
So what is it that you love about The Lord of the Rings?
So I love everything about Lord of the Rings.
Straight up right in the beginning.
Straight up knocking it right out of the park. I really do love every single thing about Lord of the Rings. There's just so much in it, and it's like, first of all, it's like if you look at J.R.R. Tolkien and like how he created this whole thing, it's like he started by telling his kids or granddaughters or something. Nice branded message there with the Coca-Cola. I hope they're sponsoring this.
They're not.
Well, you just sneak it in enough that like it's like, you know, like maybe Coca-Cola is okay. Hey.
Maybe you guys want to sponsor me?
Give me a call.
How about you, J.R. Tolkien? Oh wait, you're dead.
You're dead. And I think it's the people who guard his what's that called? Where it's like there's all this stuff that came before.
Oh. Right.
The thing. Yeah, the rights. The rights to all of his work. His legacy.
Yeah,
the people who guard his legacy. I heard they're not that easy to deal with. So, good luck on getting that.
This isn't at all on the same level as J.R.R. Tolkien, but do you remember the actor Ernest Borgnine?
Yeah.
Yeah. His daughter like kind of controlled his career in the last 20 years of his life. And like, I got a gig like hosting some weird benefit gig that she was putting together. And she was like really weird about like Ernest Borgnine. And it's like, look, we all love Ernest Borgnine. That's fine. But like, you're treating it like it's the fucking gold reserve in New York. Like relax. Like, we're all good.
Yes.
He's fine.
The gold reserve in New York. I like that. I like that that reference because there's lots of gold under New York City.
There is, according to Die Hard, they were able to sneak it out in Die Hard 3. That's not a real thing, but
oh, that was in Die Hard. but the actual thing is a real thing. It's underneath Manhattan is a reserve of one of the largest gold reserves in the entire world.
Mm-hmm. Bigger all than sorts of different Fort Knox.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, if. If our man, what's his name? Bruce Willis. My God, I can't believe I forgot his cop name. But when Bruce Willis figured it out, Jeremy Irons got screwed. Yeah. Again, these are not real things. And we jumped so far away from Lord of the Rings. So there's the whole history, like you said, of the creation of the book.
And so he basically, like, he started with The Hobbit, which is a different movie.
Yes. Which
but he started with The Hobbit by like his kids or grandkids or somebody. He was telling somebody stories, like just making up bedtime stories. And then it turned into this huge thing with like thousands of years of history and this like creation story, which like they don't really get into in the movies, but it's woven through everything. And if you get real geeky, you can like, you know, you can find the little nods to the different gods and goddesses and the creation myth of Middle Earth.
Sweet. Sweet. So you're a big fan of large, excuse me, when universes.
Yes, especially this one. There's just so much that's great in it. I mean, like, first of all, you got Gandalf, and like Gandalf is just they make him. I think they did this to make the movies more relatable and palatable. But like, if you read the books, Gandalf, he's all knowing. He doesn't sweat the small stuff. He doesn't know everything that's going to happen. But yeah, but he has total trust. In the movies, they make it seem like he's like worried about things. But he's not. He's Gandalf.
I like the way you describe the difference in the two characters. The movie Gandalf. Like, yeah, they make it seem like he actually has doubt. Oh.
Yeah,
wow, that's a different type of character.
He also added some beautiful things in the movies that weren't in the books. First of all, the first line that Gandalf has in the movie, the first line of the whole movie, is where Frodo runs up, you know, it's in the Shire, and he goes, "Gandalf, you're late." And Gandalf goes, "Frodo, a wizard is never late. He arrives precisely when he means to." This was not in the books. This was created by
Peter Jackson.
I think. Philippa Boyan. Yeah.
The other writer.
Yeah.
One of the other writers. Not,
yes. Not the.
And you loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh huh. I use that all the time.
Yeah, you do.
It's a great excuse when you're late.
And it does. It does command the room. That's a beautiful line to actually say in front of other people.
Yeah. The other line that was in the movie that was not in the books was, "You shall not pass."
Really?
Not correct. Not in the book. Made for the movie.
That's like the most epic of the, certainly of the first third of this movie we're speaking of. Wow. Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Was not.
So.
Yeah. Made up.
So what are, it's kind of a weird, what did those, like the line, like being a hardcore book person, and then when you saw the movie adaptation, you still loved it. Like, what did those add to it for you?
Well, I read the first book for like a book report before it came out in movies. I was probably like 12 at the time, and 13, 14, something like that. And when it came out, I was like, God fucking damn it. I have to know like where this story goes. So I immediately started reading the rest of the books.
Just kept going.
Yeah. And then when like the next one, like this was like the, probably the biggest source of angst in my life at that point, from 2001 to 2008, was waiting until the next Lord of the Rings movie came out. I was just so into them.
Okay, so is Gandalf the character that you kind of connected to the most, or the most intrigued by, or the
at first definitely Gandalf, yeah, and then also it's like each character has their own greatness to them, and I watched the series like a couple times in a row, like recently while I was working on stuff, just having it on the background, and I noticed things I'd never noticed before, where like these different choices that the characters make that like change how things go for them throughout the story. And it's like there's this one towards the end of the first, like one of the big story arcs is Aragorn, the guy who you first meet as like this ranger who, you know, just is
does some all dude these, who's hired for the gig, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That was kind of the vibe, and at least in the movie it was.
Like, yep, and then you learn early, like a little bit later, that he is the one person who could claim the whole kingdom of men, Gondor. He's the only one who has the right to claim the throne. And in the movie, he's like, it's his kind of resistance against that. And then there's this one part where Boromir, the other human in the fellowship. he's tried to take the ring from Frodo, and he gets shot by the guy with the dreads.
Big fan.
Yeah, exactly.
The Rasta guy. Okay.
Yeah. He gets the Rasta orc, and
that's right.
Yeah, and Aragorn's coming up to him, and Boromir's like, "Oh my gosh, I tried to take the ring from Frodo. Man has fallen. I have failed, and all everything's going to turn to darkness." And Aragorn, in that moment, he's like, "No, I do not know the strength of our people, but we will go." He says something like that, and then Boromir, before he dies, he goes, "Our people." So it's like, you see there, like, I'm getting chills.
Yeah.
Because it's like that's that one choice where Aragorn, like, before it's kind of like, oh, it's like those people, and then he talks with Boromir like, our people. So he kind of takes that ownership of the throne. Another thing that's not in the book, he's gunning for that throne. He's just waiting for the time where he could get enough people to go with him.
Yeah,
it would have been something that would have been contested until he actually steps up and does these heroic things.
Mm-hmm. that's a really.
So we can spend the next about 6 hours.
Well, I mean, technically,
talking about Lord of the Rings,
they are three movies. So okay, so let's move on. Although it is really funny to hear you talk about it. It is really funny when you talk about it, because you did light up, and there are, and yeah, the aspects of why you love it are super great. Let's talk about Step Brothers.
Yay, Step Brothers. Right.
So what is it about this movie that you love so much? That's one of your favorites.
It's just one of the fucking funniest movies. It just really is. There's like something about it. And there's this amazing, like, kind of what are those things? I'm like so terrible at words on this thing at the moment. I'm like trying to find these words. Like those books that they do about like the punk scene in the 80s where all these different people contribute to it, and like it's called a
not an oral history, is it?
Yes, an oral history.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So there's
how you thought specifically the punk scene of the 80s. Like, yeah. That whole genre of books. I was like, oh, I know that one book, and it's an oral history. Like
one book.
But okay, so Step Brothers is like an oral history to you?
There is an oral history of Step Brothers that was put out as a big like online article. And
I did not know this, and now I'm very, very excited for the rest of my day.
It's incredible. Every single person who's on there, they talk about this movie as being like the most fun movie they'd ever been a part of.
Yeah.
Literally every single person. And Adam Scott on this, this was his first comedic role.
Mm-hmm.
It came out a couple years later, so he was already in like Parks.
Yeah, he had already started. Yeah. Yeah.
By the time it came out. But this was his first comedic role.
Yeah.
You're familiar with the Adam Scott history. That's funny. So he's like, he's talking about how he's just like, oh, okay, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm really weird about how much I love him. And I do remember watching him in Step Brothers being like, this is the weirdest kind of funny I've seen in a long time. Like his brand of funny. Cause like you said, he wasn't used to being funny. He just, yeah, so hear his version of like, yeah, I just kind of went with it and just sort of followed everyone's lead and realized like I can't actually fuck up. I can just go for it, and either someone will help me or we'll just do it again.
Yeah, and that was the kind of, from reading this oral history, I got, that's the kind of atmosphere that Adam McKay actually like created with this whole with this whole movie. It's like how it was created was just from this sense of chaos and like letting people loose to do what they do.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, I remember. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please. No, I'm actually just having a lot of, because of what I know of you, it is really interesting to hear you like that specific, because you're funny, you have good taste. Like, you're one of the people that I would definitely count as funny and good taste friend. And and you and specifically the chaos of the creation of this, where I mean I don't know if now I'm thinking, did I actually read the oral history? But like that they had just come off of the Ballad of Ricky Bobby.
Yeah.
So like it was this total like, let's just turn on cameras and be stupid instead of trying to coordinate with NASCAR and like do this other thing. And then what ended up showing up was just like one of my favorite things is the blooper reel. When specifically when Will Ferrell's trying to like brag to John C. Reilly about like how much sex he had, and they just couldn't stop laughing because it was so stupid. is it not so much a character but just the creative chaos and the magic that came out of it?
Totally.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, because my point of view about comedy, it's like it doesn't, the thing that you're laughing about doesn't matter. They're like, it has zero relevance to like the actual laughter. It's like you can make someone laugh by doing anything. I mean, if you look through the years, like through the ages of comedy, what people laughed at the 80s is so different than what people would laugh at today.
Sure.
And I mean, there are some things that, you know, there are some movies where that were made in the 80s that you watch and they're still relevant to today. But like the kind of topical things in the 80s that only 80s people would laugh at in the 80s, it's like it truly doesn't really matter what the thing is you're laughing at. It just that release and like that you letting that energy go. Because like, you know, there's like there are certain things where it's like, in the moment, you know how there are certain comics who like can go on stage and address the thing that's going on at the moment and make everyone laugh?
Yeah, sure.
And then it's like, and then, you know, a year later, that thing isn't a thing anymore.
Right. Right. Well, especially now.
Yeah, especially now. Yeah. But like the same comedian, that comedian wouldn't go up and do the same bit they did when the thing was up in people's worlds.
Right.
So it's like, I think this movie and the comedy of this movie, it transcends the age when it was made, where it's just about it's just how do we get out of control and just have a good time.
Yeah. And then in a really funny way, it that's what makes it timeless.
Yep. Exactly.
Like, it's a real basic, like, I mean, like in terms of themes of movies and whatnot, it's like, okay, there's family and then there's that weird relationship. And then there's this weird, you know, never growing up thing. Yet their never growing upness is the triumph of the movie, which is the dumbest, most wonderful triumph of a movie ever, to have Will Ferrell sing beautifully while John C. Reilly's going boats and hoes. I mean, that's supposed to be like the triumph. I mean, it is. Yeah. And the, I heard this great thing that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar once described jazz in America, and he was like, "It's like you just throw the seeds of creation out and see what grows." And this movie specifically with comedy really was just like, "Let's just be dumb, let's just see if we can make each other laugh." And that's the best is like when actors are actually trying to crack each other, and then when they do, and they're like, okay, let's pull together and do it again so we can actually show this to people and have it
And that's a very beautiful thing. I mean, it's like what you were talking about, where it's like there's so many, you know when you're watching a movie where they're trying to make people laugh, but it's just like maybe the script is great or something, but like there's no energy behind the lines, there's no energy behind the comedy, and it just falls like
Yeah,
flat. It's like
there's a performative aspect that isn't even that if the joy isn't behind. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about, like, my favorite comedy is Coming to America, and there was just this dumb, like, let's just be dumb and but yeah, you could tell they were having fun. And then I think the next big movie that came out after that was like Harlem Nights, and you could tell they weren't having any fun. Mm-hmm. Like, you could watch it and being just like, oh, this doesn't have that joy. That even though the characters are
similar thing with that.
Go ahead.
All right, I just totally remember Adam
Scott yelling at Will Ferrell scene where what's his face? Rob Riggle was behind him at the desk being like, pow! Why are you yelling pow? Yeah. It's so stupid. Right, let's move on to the next one. Because that was actually right, really, really beautiful. You pick what your third of your top five.
Eight?
Somewhere. You pick. Because I could definitely talk about either one of these and be very, very happy.
All right, let's do The Big Short.
Okay, very good. Which I just watched last night.
Yeah.
In preparation, first time I ever saw it. I've never been so enthralled by something I did not understand, and yet they made it. There are so many aspects of what made this movie great. One of them, which was so funny, which was like, okay, this is all boring and stupid, so we're going to have Margot Robbie sitting in a bathtub explain to you this thing. And it was like, oh. And so every time they're like, okay, this is dumb, we're going to have so-and-so come on right now and explain to you. And then, like, when they'd break the fourth wall to just sort of tell you this story. What I didn't expect was the three like different storylines of, like, there's this one guy who spotted it before anybody else. Then there's another guy who basically caught on to it, saw that it was good, brought it to, which I thought was the heart of the whole movie, the Steve Carell storyline, because of, like, his connection with his brother's suicide and him trying to make the world a better place, and that struggle within him, which was really, really, I mean, when he had his catharsis, I mean, I sat here just full force crying. And then the two young guys with Brad Pitt, who had this really cool, like, yeah, I'll help you guys, but I don't believe in any of this shit anymore. And then, like, the two guys' excitement and then, you know, balance. But anyway, it was like, it was one of the movies that I put on, and I honestly hit play, and then 2 hours later, I was like, oh, I forgot I was supposed to be watching this for a thing, and was totally blown away. And I have so many questions for you about this movie and why you specifically love it. So what is it about this movie that you specifically picked as one of your favorites? It froze. Oh, come on.
Yeah. See, I think my whole computer just went weird. I think the Wi-Fi went bizarre. So can you still? Okay, good. Yes.
Why is it one of your favorites? Yeah. Not just why specifically with this movie, because there's so many, like, you know, when one of my friends said this is one of my favorite movies, I do kind of see it through their eyes for, you know, as I'm watching it. But I would love to hear you talk about what makes it brilliant.
Okay, so first of all, Christian Bale's character. I love that character. he's just so, like, autistic and just, like, you know, barefoot, playing drums all the time, listening to metal music. I was like, and that was totally me when I was a teenager. It's like I drummed on everything, but, like, metal music. But, like, his awareness of the future is just so fun to watch, because he, like, just to, for his ability to perceive the patterns and to, like, go with it, even though it's so not what anybody else was even remotely looking at. It's like, that's one of those stories where it's like, yep, that's and absolutely it's so fantastic. Yeah,
it was like one of my so favorite crystal line clear. Of his was, yeah, and he like, he had no, like, when he was like, I don't know how to be sarcastic. I don't know how to be funny. I don't know how to be socially, like, I don't know how to do these things you people are accusing me of. I'm just looking at numbers, And this is very obvious to me. And everyone's like, you're crazy. When he's like, but did you even look? Like, has anyone looked at these? And they're like, nah, da 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 da. And yeah, so I that was the one character that I was kind of like, oh yeah, this is Brett's guy.
Yeah, totally. But
with that being said, like the through line, at least that I saw with all these, and I mean, you know, it's not that hard, was like, there is this thing. It is very clear if you look at it without the point of view that with the housing market, like without that, like, of course, can't. I mean, like, they even, like, the first quote of the movie was something like, you know, the way they broke it up into three acts with like a Mark Twain quote, another quote, another quote.
Oh, yeah.
But just like, if you don't have a point of view of this thing, you will see very clearly that there's this possibility. Actually, there's this probability.
Yeah.
Of this going down.
Exactly.
And then it was fun. I'm sorry. Another thing I loved is just the way they portrayed it, where you actually were rooting for this thing to crash. Like, fuck all these people. And they're like, you know, especially that one money guy, which I was like, good job, Asian dude who I've never seen before. Like, you make me hate you. You make me hate this whole system. And like, okay, I am on board with all of this. And just like how creepy everyone was, except for the people who were like aware.
Yeah. Yeah. And Steve Carell was great as, you know, the underdog of the story. It's just the whole thing was so brilliant. And I love with, like, once again, this is like Adam McKay was the director
who
directed Step Brothers and Anchorman and, you know, all those other
comedies.
And this was like his first go at like a kind of like political comedy thing. And it's like he had that same kind of chaotic, there's that same kind of chaotic element as in his other comedies, but in, you know, with dealing with this topic of finance. And it's like, this is the first, I would say this is probably the first ever financial comedy other than like Brewster's Millions.
Great pull. I was going to say Trading Places, but you're right. Brewster's Millions is a good one, too.
Yeah,
and Trading Places is way more confusing. It's like, I didn't know you traded for orange juice in a minute and a half. Is that how this works? Okay. What?
But yeah, so it's like, it's also, you can see where he actually has like a kind of purpose in creating these movies. Like the last two movies he directed, which was this one, The Big Short, and then Vice.
Yeah.
They all have these kind of... like, hey, this was something that was really fucked up. I'm going to make fun of it and show it in a comedic light. And then here's this other thing that's being created now that like could do the same thing or worse.
Yeah.
So here you go.
We're making the same mistake.
Yes.
By letting this roll and not paying any attention to it. Strangelove, like Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like one of the comments I heard about that, the brilliance of that movie is that that all the other movies of the time that tried to tell the same story were turgid. They're very realistic, but you know, whatever that means, that's not the right word. But anyway, they were of that. But the brilliance was, let's make it funny because this thing is so ridiculous. If you don't show the absurdity, then it's actually gonna have a much longer life.
That's the thing about anything. It's like, if you take anything in your life, if you make it all serious and significant,
oh my god, I love it.
It just makes it a ton of shit and you don't ever want to look at it and you try avoiding it. But like, if you take that same situation and like try to see some kind of humor about it, it's like the moment you can laugh about it, it's like you're free.
Oh my god, man, thank you for saying those words out loud in my facial direction. I mean, right now more than ever, thank you. Let's move on, because we very rarely have a fourth or eighth movie, and when you, I remember when you threw it in, it was like, I think I might have to throw Forrest Gump in there. For what reason?
It's a great movie. First of all, another movie that is totally different than the book. I wanted to read the book after watching the movie so many times, because I'm like, oh, there's probably like so much more in this of like this character and how the character functions. But the actual book was written from the point of view of the character being like mentally mentally, what is that other word that is
challenged?
Yeah.
It's offensive.
Yeah, mentally challenged and like some kind of like down south kind of like
person
who's actually mentally challenged and who's like actually stupid. And I read some like quotes from it. I was like, holy shit, no way I'm ever reading this book. Because the movie is so brilliant as the character thinks that he's stupid, but he actually just doesn't function from the judgment that other people function from. It's like, he just goes along and he just chooses stuff and he doesn't make anything significant. And it's like his life just continues to grow and expand. He's not holding himself back with like the thoughts and like the mental masturbation that we all pretty much do in our daily lives that make everything suck.
Nailed it. The way that how he walks through life, and you do see that like in the people that he cares about and the people that he loves, like the one character who seems to do that the least was his mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, but at the same time, it was interesting. She was aware of the things that other people made significant, but she just didn't have a point of view about it. Like, oh, if I have to have sex with you to make sure my son goes to a regular school, then that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what I'm going to do. And then also just like, oh, you know, with everything Forrest did in his life, is just like, well, you know, I love you.
Yeah.
It was kind of her operating point of view the whole time. It's like, I love you and I have your back.
Wow. I never looked at it that way. That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, but then I think about Jen A and, you know, and like, and Lieutenant Dan and just like all the shit they, like you said, like the mental masturbation, which they completely bought as life.
Yeah. And totally different ways. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then Bubba, maybe because again, he also was challenged.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those movies that like when I looked at the year, it's like 1994 and, you know, Pulp Fiction came out, Shawshank Redemption. That was like one of the strongest years ever for Best Picture.
Yeah.
And then there's a movement like of like, well, you know, it's clearly the best picture now is Pulp Fiction. Like that's the movie that year. But then it's like, no, you can't really say that because Forrest Gump is fucking brilliant. Like, it's so watchable.
Yeah.
It has this gigantic heart to it that, like, you know, I don't know. Those are the reasons I love it. But,
yeah, he just goes, like, in the movie, he just goes on and, like, he just, it doesn't enter into his mind. He just chooses. And it's like, that one scene in there where it's like, it's like a very, very short scene where he goes from like making a lot of money shrimping to like having a fuck ton of money. It's like the part where he's like, yeah. And, they invested me in this fruit company. And they said, I don't have to worry about money anymore. And like, he was invested in Apple.
Yeah. And he's like, that's good. One less thing to worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
It was such a brilliant line.
Yeah, and then how he still chose to do mow the lawn of the
because he enjoyed it.
Yeah, he just mowed lawns just for fun, just for free, because he enjoyed it.
Yeah,
and he had all this money. Yeah,
It's funny that you bring that up because like one of the big things for me this year has been like, you know, for 2021, you know, and this month has been like, okay, I have a bunch of brilliant friends, really brilliant friends who create in this really brilliant way, but it's not my way. Like, and then like this like kind of, yeah. Like, so this year for me has really been kind of just getting real quiet and being like, okay, what do I really want to do? Like, what would be fun? Even if on paper, it doesn't make any fucking sense, but what would be super fun for me? Yeah. And there's so much about this conversation that like, I mean, it's funny because I do like re-listening to these conversations I'm having with my friends, but this one I might be listening to a few times on a loop. Well, I know you got to go, so you let's shall we wrap it up?
Sure. Yeah, I did want to throw in one more.
Please throw in whatever you want to throw about any of these movies is what I want to hear.
I'm just going to throw in, from what you were talking about, it just reminded me of this series. I'm throwing in a 20th movie. But it's not a movie.
Okay.
Very quickly, it's if you haven't seen, The Last Dance, that's on Netflix, about Michael Jordan and the Bulls.
Oh my God, yeah. Of course I've watched it.
I would watch that episode. I think it's episode 7, the one where he goes from playing basketball to baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it's like no matter it's like it upset so many people, and everyone wanted him to continue with basketball, and he chose something that he wanted to do for his own reasons, and actually ended up working out for him. I mean, not in the way anyone thought, even him, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The like, and you know, it's funny, like, if having lived through that time, there was this, like, it was so funny because even in the moment, and it's one of those things of like, you know, one of the things I've been playing with is, you know, what if I'm not as fucked up as I think, as I think I am, everyone's like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Why would you do that? That's so stupid. Like, oh, there must be some other reason he would do that other than him just choosing it. And I remember thinking, like, mm-hmm. if I went from, like, you know, this gifted person and was doing this thing I loved to the absolute most famous person on the planet, where everyone was like throwing all these projections, and I wanted to do something different, and then the one person in the world who had my back totally was taken away from me, I'd want to do that too. Mm-hmm. Like, I would do something different. And in the moment, I was like, people are like, why would he do that? I'd be like, because his dad got murdered and it sucks to go through all that. So he wanted to change it up. Why is this so difficult for people to wrap their head around? But yeah, no, that, thank you for that, because I will watch that. I do need to watch it again. My favorite episode of that was when, at the end, when he talks about, like, when the interviewer asks him, like, you know, and this is interesting, like, you know, are you an asshole? You know, are you an asshole of a teammate? And then he, like, goes into the space of, like, this is how I did things because I wanted to win, and I wanted you to be a part of the winning, and I knew this is what it took to win. And then he just got to this space of, like, and if you don't feel that way, and you can see him absolutely start to crack, break, and then moves out of frame and, like, cuts to black, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna run through a wall. Let's talk about, so all these movies and everything you said about your favorite movies. It's really funny because these are all the things I do love about you and why you're one of my friends. And like the magic of Lord of the Rings and the way Gandalf is and his knowing. And then like Viggo Mortensen, I can't not call him Viggo Mortensen. His ownership. Like, in this universe of wizards and elves and orcs and da-da-da-da-da, he claims his power as who he is. Like, it might not be as magical as all that other shit, but mm-hmm. once he claimed it, it transformed his universe. And he went on to, you know, be him. Step Brothers, the creative chaos and the magic that comes out of absolutely letting go of expectation and just being like, what if we just did this for fun? Which shows up in The Big Short, and then The Big Short, of just like people who are fucking different and see it and are committed, like, each step of the way. You know, what was great about The Big Short that I loved watching was, like, everyone except for Christian Bale's character had a chance to back out, and they were mm-hmm. all given a moment of like, hey, you can go talk to this guy, and you will now find out what you need to know, because that's what we're here to figure out. Christian Bale was the only one who's like, I don't need to talk to anyone. This is what I know. But, you know, that was kind of the beauty of the journey, to see how each person kind of, you know, did their thing. And then, with Forrest, of just not having that I mean, I love how in this reality you have to be challenged, you know, to actually live with choice and without a point of view and live with that magic. And those are all you, man. Like, like that's the brilliance of you. I can't get around it, is that you are one of my friends who, like, you know this. I don't like jamming with a lot of people. I love jamming, but I don't like jamming with more. Usually when I jam with someone, I'm like, okay, that was cool. We could move on. Like, that's great. But you're one of the few people I like creating with, because there is that. There's this just like, let's just play and let's just, you know, and it's like fun. And yeah, like you're in that circle of friends of mine that I'm like, that person has fun. And look what they're creating. Like, it makes me so happy. And yeah, hearing you talk about all of this is just, I mean, do you see that in you?
Yeah, well, when you say it. Like, oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense why I chose all these movies.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, it was funny because right away it was just like, oh yeah, a wizard arrives when. Yep, you're right. That you're damn right. And just as each movie went, we just, yeah, it's beautiful, man. I really love doing this. And right now, thank you for the gift of this, because I needed this. I've been asking for this. So, cool. And I really appreciate it, because, like, again, you are one of the people that I adore. And I'm so grateful to have in my life. And hearing you say this is, it's just really great. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you so much. Hey, by the way, I need another song to learn that you like.
You want me to send you?
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I've been, so one of the things I've been doing with my time of late has been like, okay, if I was a international touring artist, what would I be doing with my time? And like, I'm totally going through my songbook and going over songs that I'm like, oh wait, this was great. And like, I'm not playing them online. I'm just like learning them.
Yeah.
And it's become this very funny, like, okay, if I were being right now, the thing that I am trying to create, what would I do? Like, what would I do with my time? What would I be with my time? And that's one of them. So, yeah, I got a couple. A couple that I'm really curious. Yeah, okay, I got it. I got one. It's one of the ones I'm working
okay,
on.
Okay, cool.
I would love to hear your version of it as well.
Awesome, yes.
Right. Okay, I'm going to let you go. I hope to see you soon, man. I really do. I signed up for the SOP, so I don't know how that's going to go down, but
cool.
However that shows up, I'll at least see you cool. There.
Yes. Awesome.
All right, brother.
Thank you so much for having me on here.
Thank you for your time, and I will see you later.
Awesome.